5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all, or maybe just one, who knows. It's the new Panic Room episode 313 on the 25th of May, 2023. When you think about it, it was 2016 when we started all this nonsense, and here we are all these years later. Not learned our lesson, to be honest. We're still doing this late at night, well past both of our bedtimes, I have to say. You know, as we get older, our bedtimes do get earlier, you know. So you know, dear listeners, you're lucky we're still awake, to be honest with you. But anywho, I dedicate that song to the old mate Mucker Christina. She's the stalwart of A, the show, and B, Hellbound Books. And she puts up with so much crap from me, bless her little heart. So without further ado, we're going to bring her on.
Come on, I'm with you.
Well, you haven't been to explain how are you this evening. I'm in a bit of a buoyant mood. Actually, it's the last day of school for my little girl tomorrow. She breaks up for like 30 million years summer vacation, which is nice. We picked up our community pool tags this morning, so. And it's great. I mean, many years ago I had a house with a pool, and it's great and everything, but they are so much hard work and so expensive. A bag of salt's salt for fuck's sake, $30 for salt, you know. And we have literally it's just around the corner. It's a social thing for the kids as well, and they get all the joy of the pool. None of the expense. I mean, obviously, it's paid for in my homeowners association fees, but not even a fraction of what I used to pay out when we had a pool. So it's all good stuff, and you know, you get to go and swim in other people's wee wee, which is.
Yeah, that sounds great. I remember when I lived in Texas.
You one of those snobs who gets out of the pool to go for a wee?
Well, I am one of those snobs, kind
Really?
Of. You know, that's just,
even
the shower. You're gonna pee in your feet? Oh my god, that's so gross. I'm a little snobby.
Here's my confession for the week. So actually last Sunday, I was actually mowing the grass in the backyard. We have a big backyard, and I was there and needed a wee, and I thought, I'm going to put a trace into the house and take my shoes up, because my shoes are all messed up with grass and bits and that. So I just whipped it out and had a wee behind one of my trees. We've got a bunch of trees, a big huge tree in the backyard. As far as my dogs are concerned, that tree is fucking mine. I own that tree now, and they can all just fuck off. So, It was great, you know. Thankfully, you know, we're pretty. You know, pretty concealed, so the neighbours didn't see it. I presume they didn't. I mean, nobody said anything, but if a man can't wee in his own backyard, what's the world coming to? That's what
I say. It's true. Now, you ask how I was, and aside from being sick for the last, 10 days, which is just awful. I mean, this is the first day I felt, pretty much human all day long, which was amazing. Last night, I live in a really, I believe it's a really nice neighborhood. We had a bunch of, we had some cars broken into last night the second time in a couple of weeks, maybe, I don't know. It didn't seem like it was that long ago, but you know, and I'm not an early bird, and to be woken up at 8:30 in the morning by the cops at your door, that just pretty much stopped my heart. And they just wanted to ask if they, you know, we caught anything on the cameras, which we didn't. Yeah. And just the house directly behind us, they had their car broken into.
Yes,
I do live in a really nice neighborhood. But here's the thing. Why do people leave their wallets in their cars? Why people would do this.
We don't leave anything. It's funny. I'm still, I don't even leave my car out. It is in the garage. I'm still on the next door app, actually, because we don't have it around here, but from my old neighborhood. And there's people there go, I left my laptop and my wallet and my cell phone in the car, and somebody broke in and took it. Well, seriously, you know, to be fair, without sounding horrible, serves you right. Be honest, don't be so stupid.
You know, we
do live in a nice neighborhood as well. And obviously they target the nice neighbors because, people have got stuff, you know.
The
house across the cul-de-sac from us, he's an older guy, he's kind of semi-retired guy, a mail order tie bride, which is kind of amusing. I'm not going to do the voice because that would offend people. She came pottering across, and not only had they overnight stolen their truck off his driveway, they also stole the security camera. And I'm trying to keep a straight face, and she's saying, "Oh, you need to, you know, make sure you're secure and everything." And like, and they stole the camera. I thought, well, that's just brilliant, isn't it? That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, my car is in the garage. We have our early warning system. Anybody walks by, you know, we know, and obviously anybody walking by knows we've got a pack of dogs. And I think anybody breaking in would probably be torn limb from limb, to be honest with you. But it's a nice deterrent. People hear a bunch of dogs barking. They think twice before breaking into this house.
Unlike your
stupid little dog. They've got a budgerigar, so we're going to break in and steal that because it's no danger.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, I can't. But they do create such a ruckus that I think that nobody would come to the door anyway.
Anybody walking by, you know, if you're asleep, they wake you up and you're there waiting for them with your small armory.
This is hilarious. When I told you, the police knocked at the door at 8:30 and the dogs start going crazy. I'm pulling up the camera to see what the heck is going on. The husband's going to check the door. But I'm watching the policeman, and they point. We have a sign that says, "Don't ring the doorbell. You'll get the dogs, you know, involved, and they're crazy dogs." And the police officer starts laughing, and he points to the sign. The other guy's like, "What's that? They're crazy dogs." And I'm like, it's... I don't know. It made me laugh. It was funny. I'm like, I got that on tape. That was pretty funny.
Morning. Even stupid little dogs like you. To be fair, they're not proper dogs, to be honest with you, I have to say. But they make a noise. I mean, they're not going to deter anybody, but there'll be certain people think, well, if there's anybody in, or they're alerted now that there's somebody around. So
Yes, they did a good job.
I don't know if I told you, we are, again, rather foolishly contemplating getting another one. Because we're now at that point where it's like, well, one more really isn't going to make a lot of difference. And I'm probably only a couple of dogs away from a guest spot on Animal Hoarders on the TV show. Had it not been for my daughter's pit bull getting knocked up, I was planning to get a Rottweiler pup. And it's kind of popped back into my head, and I've been looking, I'm talking to a couple of breeders online at the moment, so watch this space.
That's definitely what you need, is another dog.
That's just what we were thinking. That's what we need, is another dog in the house. So we shall see. But we could prattle on all evening, and indeed we do sometimes. But what are we going on the show this evening? What's your name again?
Yeah.
Who are you?
I feel that way too sometimes. This is one of those exciting shows. I absolutely love it when we can bring on an author and their narrator. I think that is the coolest thing ever. And I don't think I even thought too much about it before actually doing, you know, the audio books for, you know, well, not doing them, but managing them. I never really thought too much about it, but now I'm like, it's so cool to me. So, you know, I mean, you know, no, anyway,
sorry,
I'm just going to...
It would be funny if you narrated the audio books, because they would all last like 6 minutes. You know, a 600-page book, you would condense it, you just read it so fast and you're done. You know, but sorry,
nobody could understand it either then.
And
if I did,
it would need subtitles because nobody would understand the accent. So.
I understand it just fine now, but yeah, it's true. I'm like super duper excited. We have author Raylan Lone Walker, and we have voice actor Mark Harrietta.
Yeah.
Hello out there.
Hello.
Hello. We should have Raylan and Mark. We've got you both on together this evening, guys. How are we doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Mark?
Yeah, I'm great.
Good. Well, what a great show that was. So.
Yeah. Don't you have any questions?
That was one of the best shows ever. That was great. Off to bed now. It's been a week. You know, I'm fried this week. My daughter's off. She's very demob happy at school. And there's a bone of contention with me. They finished their star testing sort of middle of last week. Now, when I was at school, you know, they were teaching us stuff till the very last minute. And then we would have the last day. So, like, tomorrow we would have the day off. We could take board games in and do all that. Now, they finished the start. So, literally a week and a half, they're doing nothing. They're watching movies. They're only in there because the state says they've got to do so many seated hours or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's just, what an absolute waste. It's just a horrible waste of time. But anyway, so she's demob happy. And, I mean, she baits the teachers at the best of time, and her and all her friends are going to go in and just raise hell tomorrow. So I'm going to be on a knife's edge all day tomorrow waiting for the phone call. So.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
This was my very first year with no kids in school at all, and I don't know how I feel about that, you know, and also, you know, Facebook gives you the, you know, last year and your memories and stuff. So that was a bittersweet moment when I saw my kid graduating high school and, oh, man, where does the time go? But I was happy the school bus just makes the dogs crazy. So in this year he didn't have school, but the dogs still go crazy when the bus goes by, and I'm like, he's here, why are you barking, he's here. So they're still excited about something. They're like, yay, happening.
As you know, to refer back to earlier in our conversation, your dogs are all stupid and stupid. So
horrible,
stupid little dogs. They really are. Horrible.
You know, I've sent pictures to both Ray. I sent pictures to both Raylene and Mark, and Ozzy is adorable. He is adorable. Yeah. So.
Honestly, my pit bull does craps bigger than your seriously.
Oh, for sure.
Honestly, she's not, as Pitbull goes, she's not massive, but she cracks like a Great Dane. I mean, it's unbelievable what comes out of that dog's back end. It really is.
I prefer small dogs, so. but,
small,
you know,
dogs,
we could talk about.
Poop.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. So if you get up in the middle of the night and step on them, it's not as bad. Well, you know what? Stepping on poop in the middle of the night is bad no matter what it is. So. That's not true. But, I like those. Well, see, the little ones, you know, you can. We sometimes have, like, little scuffles between the dogs. And with little ones, you just pick it up and they have nothing. Like, they can't do anything. This little guy, I pick him up sometimes, and I just hold him there, and he just, like, deflates. He's like, oh, because, you know, he can't do anything anymore. And it's kind of funny. It really is. But I guess maybe I'm just a bully. That's awful. So, I know. So,
we need to do a section, you know, what our dogs did this week section at some point. That'd be great.
Yes. That'd be perfect. That'd be great.
So I was going to ask you, you guys have dogs?
I have three. How about you, Mark?
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. I have one dog and two cats. And one of my cats is hairless.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Is that yeah. intentional, or do you just shave it for a laugh?
No, that's intentional. Yeah, no.
I kid you not, actually. Me and my daughter, my son's dog is a lab shepherd mix, and he's very, very fluffy. And we often say, just as a wind-up for my son one day, we're going to get get the dog and just shave him and just see what my son says.
Oh, that's awful.
That would be cruel, James.
Yeah.
I know. It would be funny, though. It really would.
But it, with your sense of humor, it would be funny.
It would, yes.
So we are here tonight to talk about the giggling boy, and you know, I'm not sure the tagline. I was just, can you smell the smoke? And I can now that I've gotten to hear a bunch of the audio when we were doing this, and there were a couple parts of it that I definitely had chills and. I definitely want to hear more. So, Rylan, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this book started, I think, in 2011. I started writing it, started working on it. I had studied under a medicine man, a Ute medicine man, and I was going to write a biography about him. And when we got to a part about his school days, he told me about going off to a mission school, and I was like, what is that? And once I started learning about it, then I realized there's a whole deeper story to get into. And I went to three or four different reservations, and you have to know me, you'd have to see me. I'm Shoshone Indian, but my father's side of the family's Nordic, so I'm very white. But I do have family that lives on a reservation, so when I went to do research on the reservation, it's kind of hard for a white person to start interviewing, especially in these deep, very sensitive areas, and had a lot of trouble with that. But I finally broke through, and people started telling me their stories, and I couldn't just tell everybody's story individually, so I combined them all into one character by the name of Smiley. And, it was a very difficult book to write. There were often times I'd sit in my hotel room and just lose it because of the story I heard and how these children were treated. And, that's how the story began.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to also ask Mark. I know that there were parts of the book that were difficult for him to record. And I mean, how did you get into that that space, into the headspace?
You know, this is normally when I record, I tend to record front to back. I look at, you know, kind of the character arcs. I always do my pre-read and get my notes together, and then we'll kind of go right from start to finish and just kind of go through it. This book was a little different, and Rylan there gave me great direction when we were talking about the differences between the chapters for the pastor and chapters for Smiley, and how he wanted Smiley to kind of come off during the narration scene. So there was a lot of collaborative work to really kind of get into that space. But what I did a little differently is I actually recorded all of Smiley's parts and his chapters at one time, and then went back and recorded all of the pastor's parts at a separate time. So I almost treated it like two separate books, because you're right. There was one, I can't remember the chapter. I think it was a Smiley chapter, but I actually had to kind of take a couple of days and kind of get my mental state back. Cause to your point, it was a hard book to write. It was a hard book to narrate, but it's such an important story. It's something that just absolutely needs to be told and people need to listen.
Well, I have to say, as an author, when you're writing, you hear these words in your head and you get the idea of what the voice would sound like and what the character would be like. And when I heard your recording, I'm thinking to myself, that's not even close to what I was imagining, but it was better.
Thank you.
This is amazing, especially when you came off with Orcus. I was like, oh my gosh, I had chills. I was just like, I couldn't believe it.
Orcus?
was the most
yeah.
fun I had on this book. He was he was where I was able to kind of really get some frustration out, and you know, it was a lot of gritted teeth, and the gain on the microphone was turned way down so I could yell and I could, you know, really just make make Mr. Pratt there know exactly what I thought of him.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. And I also appreciate the fact that you didn't try to add a native accent to it or make it sound like it was something it wasn't. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It wasn't forced in any way, shape, or form.
No,
I
think it's very important that you try to convey it through emotion versus some accent or some fake accent. Now that some of the accents done were to kind of convey, you know, authoritarian figures versus other people. But to your point, not being native, putting a native accent on, to me, just is not a good place to be.
Yeah, exactly. So I appreciated that. Yeah, I have a lot of responsibility to the people who gave me their stories and how this book came out, and I'm very protective over it because it's not because of the book sales. It's because of the people who talked to me and who gave me their stories and told me, I don't want my name anywhere in there. I don't want people to know this happened to me, but, you know, this is my story, and I had a responsibility back to them, and you did a great job in representing that, and I appreciate that. And for those of you
Thank
who
you.
Haven't read the book is an alternating chapter. The chapter starts with somebody who is a pedophile who is very devious in their being and harms children. And the children that are put in his charge come from reservations and are forced to be there. Then the next chapter is Smiley, who's experiencing this abuse. And so you have two different perspectives. And Mark is very good at bringing out both of those perspectives with his voice. And so I highly recommend the audiobook.
Speaking of, I think that we have a clip to play. And I've heard clips myself during the making. And so I'm super excited. I don't know if we... I don't know if you have to set it up, Mark. I don't even think Braylon knows what part we're playing, so you might.
I do not.
So I actually, I went a little off the board. Normally, I take something from the beginning of the book. This time, I actually chose pretty much smack dab in the middle, so people will get kind of an idea of some of the actions and consequences.
Awesome.
Okay,
James.
are we good to go? Yeah, so I haven't nodded off. No, I'm waiting for it to be set up. And here we go, clip from the Giggling Boy.
I already had marks on my back that made some of the other new children gasp. As we were marching naked around the room, some of the soldiers pointed and yelled at us. They pointed at our places that should be hidden. They made us march back out to the courtyard in front of the girls. I didn't want my sister to see my back, so I closed my eyes when I went near her, foolishly believing if I couldn't see her, then she couldn't see me. After we marched naked in front of the girls and lined up on our side of the courtyard, they finally gave the order to put on our uniforms. The wind of shame was blowing hard on us. The girls went through the same processing, and when my sister came marching naked past me, I closed my eyes again. She was older and more developed, and my heart hurt, not only for her, but for all the girls. It was a day of great shame. Later that day, the skinny boy and I were sent to the kitchen to help with preparations for the evening meal. When we reported to the kitchen, one of the cooks made the skinny boy hold out his hands, and then she smacked them ever so hard with her big wooden spoon. Although I was sure he felt the pain, he didn't respond. When we were left alone to peel potatoes, I whispered to him, "Why did the cook hit your hands?" "So I won't take any food," he whispered back. "I have to work with their food, but I'm not allowed to eat any of it." My face held its natural smile, but I wasn't feeling any pleasure or happiness. You may smile if you like, he added, because maybe you think I've been a thief, but if you were me, you would have taken some food too. The smell of it makes me so hungry. Feed us? I asked him. They starve us. I couldn't believe that. Do they really starve children? I'll tell you what I did, he said, but only because you're here. Let it be a lesson for you. They call me Joe, but my real name is Nanawu. Mr. Pratt sent me and some other boys out to work with the white men at a ranch. But I'm not strong, and it was hard for me to keep up with the hard work. The owner of the ranch complained that I wasn't doing my work and refused to pay Mr. Pratt my salary. For every penny Mr. Pratt said he lost on me, he sentenced me that many lashes of the strap. It's harder when the blows add up from the day before, especially when Mr. Pratt delivers them. So I tried to work harder. I tried to be stronger. But I still couldn't do all the hard work they demanded. Most of the other boys were able to do all the work, but not me. So Mr. Pratt got very mad at me. He told another boy that I should work with him. The other boy was to show me how to work harder and longer. I went with him to see what he did at the ranch. He paused and looked away from me. Well? I asked. That's when the lady of the ranch came out on the porch and pointed at the boy I was with and said, Give me that one. He's cute. I can use him in the house for chores. But when I went to follow the men, she pointed at me. Not you, she said. You're an ugly one. You work outside with the other boys. So I knew I was in trouble because I couldn't work with the boy I was assigned to. And then I was in trouble for the work I wasn't going to be able to do because I'm weak. Being whipped hurts, you know. But to have the lady of the ranch refuse me and say I was ugly hurt more. She confirmed that I was different, revolting, worse than being called a savage. I also know her words of rejection would make them whip and starve me more because I had failed to do as Mr. Pratt instructed. He lowered his voice. I could hardly hear him. I'll bet you never had anyone say you were ugly with such harsh consequences. No, I said. In my family, in my tribe, we don't think or say things like that to someone. He just nodded. Pratt said that beating me wasn't doing enough good to me. So he also started restricting my food, too. Every day, less and less food. I couldn't say to the rancher that I couldn't work because I didn't have supper last night, and I won't get any tonight because you grumble about my work. And now, Mr. Pratt makes me work in the kitchen, too. I get to work around the food. I can smell it cooking, but I can't have any. He kept peeling potatoes. His bottom lip began to quiver, and his fists clenched. His eyes welled up and eventually began streaming with tears. He held the peeled potato in his hands and just stared down at the floor. Mr. Pratt stopped beating me, he said after a minute, when he saw it hurt me more to be starved. Then I began finding bits of food in this kitchen to eat in secret. But one day, the cook came in and saw me with a tiny bowl of cold soup. She reported it to Mr. Pratt. And now, every time I come into the kitchen for work, I have to stop and stand in front of her so she can hit my hands with her wooden spoon. That's to remind me not to take anything. I had never peeled potatoes before and was making a mess of my potato. So Joe took the knife I was holding and picked up a new potato and step by step, showed me how to properly peel a potato so I wouldn't get in trouble. The smell of food doesn't feed me, he said. It just makes me hungrier. Do I look very skinny to you? You don't seem any skinnier than the other children, I said. His face changed expression. You say that because you don't want to hurt my feelings or frighten me into thinking I'm sick, he said. I am sick. Hope I will die soon. I want to be ill. I looked at him in bewilderment. You don't understand, he said. If I'm ill, they'll let me die. If they let me die, it will be all over, and I won't be hungry anymore. They can't beat a dead child back to life. They say that when we die, we go to the white man's heaven, and their God will let us live in heaven because we've been baptized. We are saved. When I get to heaven, I get to look down on my father, my mother, and my little sister. I can ask the white man's God to protect my sister from this evil place. I'll ask him if she may stay at home with my parents. I want to ask the white man's God to take a good look at this place. He should destroy such a place. When I get to heaven, I want to ask the white man's God many questions about his white children. Blew my ears, I said. Do you really want to die? I'm very ill now, he said. I know that, but I'm not sick enough to be in Mr. Pratt's way. I think I'm getting weaker. Mr. Pratt hasn't given up beating me. He saw that. Just yesterday he punched me in the head. And look, you see this bump? He turned his head, and under his short hair I saw a hard purple knot. It hurts real bad, he said. It feels like it's getting bigger. Last night it hurt so bad, I had to cry. And that maybe I would get to go to the infirmary. I was there once. The madams and doctors there were nice to me. He fixed his big eyes on me. His eyes were kind, but his cheeks were hollow. His skin was pale, and his lips were rough and thin. To give up on life. No matter how bad things ever got on the reservation, I never once thought about giving up on living. I could see that Joe didn't have much strength left, though. He was as near to death as I had seen a person up to that time in my life. How could he keep living? Please don't die, I said to him. I need you to be my friend. I need you to help me at this school. I'm afraid, and I don't know what to do about it. I will be your friend, he said. And I will help you as long as I'm here. I looked at him again. It looks to me like you're ill enough to go to the infirmary, I said. He smiled. Alas, someone agrees with me that I'm in poor health. He slowly reached into the pile to pick out another potato. Mr. Pratt and the cook will be coming along shortly, he whispered. We ought to stop talking. He went on peeling potatoes. I counted 60 potatoes that we had to peel. That was less than a quarter of a potato per student. A minute later, Joe looked around again. We were still alone. Run away if you get a chance, he whispered. Your chances are best when you first get here. Not many people know you, so they won't miss you when you run away. But where would I go? I don't even know where I am. I don't know how to get home from here. My voice was shaky. You have to leave this horrible place, was all he could say before the door opened and a boy about my size came in carrying a huge load of wood for the cook stove. When he saw us, he said, I'm supposed to help in the kitchen while the other boys clean up for dinner, he said as he put the wood down. But my hands are so blistered, I couldn't do all my work today. We could see huge blisters that had burst open and were seeping. Uh-oh, said Joe. You'll have to pay Mr. Pratt. He sounded like the thought of the boy being punished would be nothing more than a sharp scolding. I was surprised to see how vacant his eyes were. I came to understand later that if you live among the wicked, you become numb like that. It doesn't take too long. I don't want to pay Mr. Pratt, the boy cried. I went to dinner without Joe, who was sent to kneel on the floor by his bed and pray. The boys lined up next to the tables for boys, and the girls lined up at the tables for girls. I could see my sister across the room, but we already knew that if we got caught looking at each other, we would be punished. I dared not look too long at her. When Mr. Pratt entered the refectory, he immediately trained his eyes on me. The look on his face scared me. As soon as he took his place at the head table, two boys took their places, one standing at either side of him. Mr. Pratt folded his hands and began his prayer for the evening meal. when he finally said amen and the other took his coat, and they hung them on hooks at the end of the room. The gravity with which the boys did this was like a great chief being served by the youths of his tribe. When Mr. Pratt was seated, another boy brought him a pipe loaded with tobacco and lit a match so he could puff life into it. After our skimpy meal ended, the girls had collected the plates and took them into the kitchen. The boys were ordered to stand at attention for the announcement of the evening chores. Mr. Pratt stood in front of us, opened a big book from which he read our names, and gave us our chores. While he was doing this, his pipe went out. So one of the boys struck a match and held it so he could light his pipe again. He pushed the boy away.
"Smells like manure in here," he said, "like livestock and filthy savages."
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media, our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Such stuff.
I needed serious therapy afterwards.
I can imagine.
It,
my editor and I, my editor at the time, she was really good at pushing me to do research to back up the stories that I had heard from these folks. And so there were times where I just had to just shut everything off and go live life for a couple of weeks and try to put my life back in perspective, because I got lost in this story. And I just, it was just, I don't know how to describe it, but it was mind-altering for a while. And even after I wrote it, I didn't read the book when it came out. I didn't go back and reread it. But then when Mark came out with the audiobook and I listened to it, I'll be honest that it broke me into tears several times. Yeah, it was rough to hear it back to me. Yeah, it was. It's a tough story. And I get a lot of readers tell me, this was the hardest thing I've ever read, not because of the writing, not because of the way it's put together. It's just trying to digest what happened to these children. Because a lot of those stories you're reading in there or hearing through the audiobook are true stories that I heard come from these people's mouths. And it's just unbelievable. I could never picture myself doing that to somebody.
Yeah.
No, no, I agree. I mean, certainly with children, and the fact that, like you say, that it is, you know, it happened. And I think, you know, you said earlier, you know, that the people you spoke to said they don't, I mean, obviously, I get that they're grown adults now. They don't want their name attached to it because they don't want people to know. So they're still carrying
right.
the shame after all these years into their adulthood. And that is awful.
Yeah, they call it reservation syndrome. And so when you hear someone say American Indians or Native Americans have a predisposition for alcohol and drugs, that is absolutely not true. They have a drug and alcohol problem because of these institutions looked at them and saw them less than human and told the authorities, you can treat them as such because they're less than human, so whatever you do to them would not be considered a sin.
It's unimaginable that people can treat not just other people like that, but children. I mean, it's funny if I'm working with working on a ghostwrite with a client at the moment. Again, like you said, I'm going through the interview process with her, and she was other way to say it. She was raped by her own father, aged 14. The age my daughter is now. And like you said, after an hour talking to her about that, I had to just stop and have the rest of the afternoon I just couldn't, you know, it was just awful. Just even thinking about that, you know, it's not any normal father of a child. You just wouldn't even enter your head. And this guy, and he justified it by saying, you know, this is what fathers do. This is, you know, this is what happens. And for her, it was she thought that's how it was, you know, until she spoke to a friend a year or so later and her older sisters, that she realized, no, that this wasn't right. I can imagine, obviously, living this. How long did it take you to put the book together, Raylan?
Honestly, it was over 5 years putting it all together. Yeah.
Wow.
But it really started with talking to this medicine man that I was learning under. When he mentioned going to the mission school, I said, well, how did that come about? And he said, well, my sister and I were playing at the school playground, and this car pulled up, and these people got out and grabbed us and put us in the car and drove us to the school, and we never got to see our parents again. And I was like,
oh my,
how does that happen? You know, so I started digging and finding out that they were able to do that. There was an actual federal mandate that they could go in and take these people's children, even clear up into 1986.
Wow.
Wow. That, yeah. So it's not, you know, that is modern times. I mean, that is even worse, you know?
Yeah, and then the parents have no idea what happened to their children. They go to the school to pick up their children, and they're gone, and no one's telling them where they are. And that would be just horrible.
Oh,
yeah,
again,
definitely.
You know, as a parent, you know, you just couldn't even imagine, I mean, what they would go through. I just, the whole thing is just so, it's just so horribly inhuman, I think is the word I'm looking for, you know. I mean, has it stirred you to do any sort of activism or the book really, you know, could raise a lot of awareness. You know, have you thought of doing more with that?
Yeah, the book I was warned pretty heavily by some of the people on the reservation that they don't want a white person being their hero. And I can understand their prejudice. I mean, I can tell you, it wasn't very fun on the reservation talking. The people who I was able to interview, they were gracious, they were beautiful, they helped me. But if I walked out of their house, if the neighbors had heard that that's what we were doing, I got chased off the reservation. I mean, physically, like they were going to physically harm me. And I can understand their prejudice. But they didn't understand that I was also Shoshone Indian. So it was just one of those things. So I need to know my place, and I can't be speaking for people if they don't want me to. So I have to be careful how I present it.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Mm. You know, just listening to the clip that we played, very much understands why Mark as well had to, take some breaks while he was recording this. I have not listened to it in its entirety, but I can imagine, that is heavy. That's so heavy. It's the material. How do you do it, Mark?
It was, the emotion that you hear in a lot of these sequences when you listen to the full book, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was kind of, as an actor, it was kind of one of those things that was easy for me to get to because it affected me on just an individual level. It's very easy to act upset and with tears in your eyes when that's literally what's happening at that moment. Having to create in the theater of the mind these situations and the catharsis of getting to, like I was saying earlier, getting to play Orcus and a demon who is giving this tormentor and this pedophile his just desserts, that was actually very therapeutic the recording process.
Wow.
You did a great job, and I feel like you picked up the frequency because we listened to a few auditions, and I felt like you picked up the frequency, like you knew right where these people were. I could hear it in your voice, and so I was very appreciative that we were able to work together because that was the connection I was looking for. It's hard when someone doesn't pick up what you're trying to put down, I guess is the way to put it.
And the way you wrote it was very easy for me to kind of understand the emotion and understand the kind of character arcs and stories and it was to your point, it was easy to get to that spot where I felt there was a connection to the characters and be able to tell that story.
You did a great,
very impressed writing.
Absolutely hate to have to do this. We're just about out of time. I just have so much fun when we get to bring the authors and the narrators together. To me, that is just and then I can just sit back and just listen and I'm just like in awe and just like, this is so much fun. So we definitely have to do it again. So you guys have to promise to come back and you will say
love
yes,
to.
Of course we'll come back. Yay.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. I again, I want to thank you so much, Raylan, and so much, Mark. And, yeah, I can't wait to do it again. And for all of our listeners out there, you have to go out and find The Giggling Boy by Raylan Lone Walker. And pick up the audiobook as well by Mark Arrieta. And, yeah, thank you so much, guys. I can't wait to have you back.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mark, for everything.
Thank you, Raylan. It was great working with you.
You too. Take care. Bye, James.
Take care.
Bye. Thanks a lot, guys. And we will speak to you again very soon. Thank you. Have a great rest of your evening, both of you.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, time has beaten us. That was fast. That was a fun. And yeah.
I know.
Great, great stuff. You know, what obviously an important tale to tell, but harrowing, definitely. But well done on both of them. A cracking job. But unfortunately, it is that time of the evening where we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Oh, we know it.